hunger on the Wakandan train tracks.
Shuri!
Baba!
Turn on the train on the bottom track.
The stabilizers will get to fix your suit. You won't have protection.
Neither will he.
Hey!
Some of Black Panther's computer-generated imagery looks fake. And apart from General Okoye's acrobatic spear work, the fighting isn't as fluid as you'd hope for from the director of Creed. But the movie's palette is gorgeous. Its roots in both pop sci-fi and African folklore. Afrofuturism is a label I've heard. The Black Panther isn't just a random super alter ego like Iron Man or Spider-Man. It has mythic reverberations. It's T'Challa's spirit animal. Chadwick Boseman gives this busy enterprise its grave, thoughtful center. Abetted by Winston Duke as an imperious rival tribe leader, Daniel Kaluuya of Get Out as a fickle ally, and as a CIA agent, Martin Freeman, who's the lone representative of the larger Marvel Universe, and uses his small stature to big comic effect. In the coming weeks, people might wonder why Black Panther focuses on the struggle within the black community, instead of against larger racial injustices. But here, in his first film, T'Challa is primarily concerned with the welfare of his own country. Let's see in future installments how he's changed by his move from isolationism into the larger world. In the meantime, let's celebrate Black Panther for what it is, a momentous event in pop culture history.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. If you'd like to catch up on Fresh Air interviews you missed, like this week's interview with Joshua Green about his book on Steve Bannon and Donald Trump, check out our podcast. You'll find lots of Fresh Air interviews. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Mood Zadie, Thea Chaloner, and Seth Kelly. I'm Terry Gross.
I'm always ready for a war again. Go down that road again. It's all the same.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from LogMeIn, makers of GoToMeeting, a collaborative meeting platform with over 18 million monthly users, designed to connect people from anywhere in the world on any device. Learn more at GoToMeeting.com. And from TIAA, for investing, advice, banking, and retirement, working to help customers achieve financial well-being so they can give back to the world. TIAA calls this the new success story. TIAA.
In Parkland, Florida, ordinary Americans performed acts of heroism amid acts of violence at a high school shooting.
These teachers, you know, ran, got all the kids that they could see and shoved them somewhere safe and locked them away so that they didn't get hurt. And I'm just so grateful.
Stories of victims and survivors this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered starts at 4 p.m. on KTOO Juno.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Fishy Rockers, the Ratfish Wranglers performance includes slides of artwork by bandleader Ray Troll. On Arts at 360, Alaska Originals. Well Read is next at 9. At 9:30, Immense Possibilities for an End to Human Trafficking visits communities coming together to expose and stop the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the country today. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
We are live, we're local, and it's time for a Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, February 15th. I'm your host, Julie Copins, here in the studio with producer Jeff Brown. And on today's show, Charlie Harrington and Ben Brown will be here to highlight Full Stream Ahead. We'll meet some Alaska mountain women. Dr. Heidi Pearson from the UAS Sustainability Club will preview the screening of the film Chasing Coral. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Bird Note, music and more on a Juno Afternoon. There's a winter storm warning in effect until 6 p.m., low tonight of 19. Stay safe out there.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren's comments at the National Congress of American Indians winter session earned her both praise and criticism. Warren addressed the frequent attacks from President Donald Trump in which he refers to her as Pocahontas. She promised to use those occasions in the future to speak up for Native Americans. She also spoke to her own ambiguous claims of Cherokee heritage.
You won't find my family members on any rolls, and I'm not enrolled in a tribe. And I want to make something clear. I respect that distinction. I understand that tribal membership is determined by tribes and only by tribes.
In a written release, NCAI President Jefferson Keel praised Warren for her courage, candor, humility, and honesty. Several Twitter conversations were less favorable. Activist Johnny J. Morris wrote on Twitter that it's offensive that Warren, when given the platform, acknowledged her family is not on any rolls, but defended the blood myths from her family narrative. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his government is planning to overhaul the way it relates to Indigenous peoples, and as Dan Karpinchuk reports, he's proposing a new legislative framework to achieve that.
Trudeau's announcement came after he met the day before with the family of Colton Bushi, the young Native man who was shot and killed 2 years ago in Saskatchewan by a non-Indigenous farmer. Last week, a jury acquitted the farmer. That led to anger and rallies across the country as Native people and supporters protested against the verdict. The family of Colton Bushi said they felt excluded and ignored by the justice system, but their meetings with ministers in Ottawa made them feel they were finally being heard. Trudeau said Canada needs, more than ever, to get to a place where Native people have more decisions about their future.
I am pleased to announce that the government will develop, in full partnership with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people, a new recognition and implementation of Indigenous rights framework that will include new ways to recognize and implement Indigenous rights. This will include new recognition and implementation of rights legislation.
The Trudeau government began signaling this new approach nearly a year ago. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, welcomed Trudeau's announcement, adding that it comes at a tough time for First Nations people. He, too, was referring to the trial and the killing of Colton Bushi. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Native American women and their allies from across Indian country turned pain into action, marking Valentine's Day as a day to remember for hundreds of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Jenny Monet has more.
It was in Fargo, North Dakota, where an organized march to honor the hundreds of missing and murdered Indigenous women in America was perhaps most impactful. School children from the Sisseton Wahpeton tribe were bused in some 100 miles to be there.
We made sure that we honored and recognized the young ones, you know. They're our future.
Ruth Anna Buffalo, a tribal citizen of the Mandan Hidatsa and Arikara Nation and member of Fargo's Native American Commission, said this year's memorial was politically significant. Fargo is where Spirit Lake mother Savannah LaFontaine Graywin was murdered. Savannah's death is what spurred proposed legislation, Savannah's Act, to curb the alarming rate at which Native American and Alaska Native women, girls, and transgender people face violence, are raped, murdered, and disappeared. That was the case of Nicole Joe, a Navajo woman who was killed in a domestic violence dispute on Christmas Day. Her suspected killer, an estranged boyfriend, was first charged with second-degree homicide for her death. Today, he faces a lesser crime, aggravated assault.
Aggravated assault. We were devastated to hear this bullshit.
Serafina Joe, Nicole's sister, held a candlelight vigil in downtown Flagstaff, Arizona. It was just one of dozens of events across Indian country where the call for justice grew. For National Native News, I'm Jenny Monet.
And I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copens, joined in the studio now by Charlie Harrington from the Hangar Ballroom and the Hangar Restaurant, and Ben Brown from the Jack. They're here to talk about Full Stream Ahead. And in case you've been living in a snow cave the last few weeks, this weekend is Wearable Art, huge event on the Juno Arts calendar. We're going to be hearing a lot about it. Today, though, we're going to focus on kind of, I guess you'd call it a spin-off event, or and so tell us, what is Full Stream Ahead, and why do you have to do it?
Well, thanks, first of all, for having us here, Julie. And it basically is more of a relief valve than a spinoff, although I like the sitcom reference to spinoff, because madness will ensue, like in any good sitcom spinoff. But basically, the demand for wearable art in the 17 years, if this is the 17th year it's been happening, has grown so much that there's no longer capacity for the two live shows on Saturday and Sunday, at which there are 818 seats pre-sold. And then there's a little standing room, you know, for volunteers, right, and those who are really nice to the ticket office when they show up and beg to be let in.
Well-dressed and charming.
Exactly.
You can still get in.
So okay. We are so lucky that we have the partners that we do in Charlie and Risha over at the Hangar Ballroom, who have helped do this additional event that allows some extra capacity, because it's been sold out for over 10 days for Saturday night.
Awesome. Okay, so Saturday night, what's going to happen at the Hangar Ballroom?
Well, you're going to be there, Charlie.
Yeah, so doors open at 7, correct me if I'm wrong, and the event starts at 8, so people can buy their tickets now. I believe there are 30 or so tickets available for the live stream, and that's essentially what it is. You're not in the event, but the way that KTO broadcasts it, there's 9 cameras.
Wow.
It's like watching the Oscars. Like, it's
awesome.
Very high production value. I was amazed last year. It was the first year we've done it. And everyone that came, I think last year we had 50 people, and maybe 60. We have some light hors d'oeuvres, and the Hangar Ballroom bar is right there. So it's a different environment,
right,
but we have the event streaming on a 120-inch screen, so everyone has a great view. We'll have lots of room. You can come with friends, and watching the event unfold so close, but in a different space is pretty entertaining, yeah.
Right. Actually, it's actually more diverse than the Oscars. I just think I should point that out. There's a higher diversity ratio. It may be more fun. I don't know. I've never been to the Oscars.
I think it'd be more fun, less preachy.
We've got some rocking MCs, I know that,
yes,
and fantastic talent on stage and behind the scenes, so it's going to be a fantastic show.
So actually, back to the numbers. There are 22 tickets left for Sunday afternoon right now for the live show. There are 0 tickets, that's why I said a moment ago, for Saturday night, and there's about 50-some tickets for the live stream party, but I imagine those will be sold out by the time doors open at 7 o'clock on Saturday night.
Yeah. Last year, I think we were going way ahead of the pre-sales that we were last year for the live stream event, and we pretty much sold out last year at the door. So if you want to come, I highly recommend getting a ticket in advance, but there is an outside chance you could buy one at the door.
Right. And so for those who might be new to Juno, or maybe this event hasn't been on their radar, what is the big deal about wearable arts and the live stream, too? What makes it such a hot ticket event in Juneau?
Well, wearable art originated in New Zealand, and it made its way across the Pacific. The Ketchikan was the first arts council, the Ketchikan Area Arts and Humanities Council, that started doing it many years ago, about 20-some years ago, down in Ketchikan. Big success there. So when Sybil Davis was the executive director of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, this was 17 years ago, she decided we should do one here. So I actually got to be the MC with Colette Costa for the third and fourth iterations back in the day. We were doing it at A and B Hall then. It was originally just a Saturday night show before there was a Sunday show. And there weren't really all these rehearsals. It has just grown by leaps and bounds into a professional, really high quality thing that it is today. And I think that's also reflected in the quality of the art that it brings out. Because what it's about is a theme this year is Molten that is put out there, and it'll be announced on Sunday what the winner of the theme is for next year. So people have a whole year to think about it, and they come up with costumes, and then they register, and they proposed their design, and they proposed their music and their model and the staging they want to do. And it's like the Olympics. I mean, there's laughter, there's tears, there's torn muscles, there's torn fabric. Right. But at the end of the day, we've got 30 surviving acts this year. They're going to present themselves on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. And they're going to, I mean, I've seen so much of the work now from my relatively new position at the Jack, but I've certainly seen it as an audience member and, as I said, a former MC. It's amazing. It's amazing
stuff. It is thrilling. When you said the Olympics, and it's sort of like, it's like the Rose Bowl Parade meets Fashion Week in Manhattan meets, yeah, and then the competitive aspect. And you see a side of people, some of the models, are people maybe that you see at the grocery store, or maybe they teach your kid third grade, but here she is up on stage rocking this incredible outfit made out of garbage cans or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is just it's just really inspiring and fun and feels very, someone next to me last year at the show said, it seems like we're not in Juneau. Mm-hmm. And they meant that in a really good way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you are new to town, I highly recommend coming to the Hangar Ballroom and watching it there. It's probably a great environment to sort of dip
social.
Your toe. Yeah.
And while we've been on the air, some of those 22 tickets for Sunday afternoon have probably already sold out. I can tell you they were all individual seats. None of them were together. None of them were anywhere near close to the front row in their respective sections. None of them were in Section B, which is the smallest section.
Right.
And Charlie and I were talking before we came on the air. The good thing about Section B, just for future references, it's small. So even if you're in the back row, you're pretty close. Mm-hmm. And it's really near a bar. But then Charlie says, everything in the Hangar Ballroom.
Yeah, you're just a few steps away.
Right. Yeah.
So it's really win-win.
Okay, excellent. Well, it sounds fantastic. So the theme, molten. So I'm thinking, that made me think of, you know, the Hunger Games where Katniss, like her dress sort of catches on fire and explodes. Are we going to see some pyrotechnics? Are we going to see some flowing lava? Anything you can kind of sneak preview?
I don't want to give anything away. I don't think the fire marshal signed off literally. Someone did want to use, as Dr. Evil said, some liquid hot magma, and we had to shut that down. That wasn't going to happen. But there are going to be so many things that approximate and artistically represent molten and fire and the transformation that happens with extreme heat. They're very diverse. I mean, every act is so unique and is such a vision of the artist that created it. So I really think people are going to enjoy it. Almost as much. Some people say they like going to the ballroom more. I've actually heard one person say last year that she liked it better because it was just a more controlled environment. She felt like she was closer and was able to enjoy the show a little more than in person, which I think is, wow, that's amazing.
So to get a close-up view of the costumes, because so many of them are made, they're so inventive and they're made out of unexpected materials, and you're not going to get it if you're far away, I wonder. So
another opportunity to get a close-up view is the official Wearable Art after party is at the ballroom right after. And there's an after party right at the Hangar Ballroom right after the performance.
Okay.
And a lot of the performers come in their full get-up.
Yeah,
dance floor gets a little interesting dancing around some of those costumes. But
okay.
Yeah.
And the after party is just open to anyone who's been at the show. So, again, this is a big difference from the Oscars. It's not like that Vanity Fair party where they've got 17 security checkpoints.
Yeah.
You get in and it's Graydon Carter.
I take back the Oscars reference. It's way better. Audio-visually, yes.
All right. Is there swag?
Actually, there are swag bags for the models and the artists, and they say molten on them. They have this year's theme, and we've got a bunch of fun stuff. So if you're a designer, you can look forward to the surprises that await when you get your swag bag.
Nice.
One other plug I wanted to make, though, Julie, is if people aren't able to go to either show on Saturday night or by going to the ballroom or Sunday afternoon, and they still want to support the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, we are still selling tickets for the Mile High Club. These are $10 a piece. It's 2 round-trip tickets anywhere Alaska Airlines flies. There are plenty of them. They're red. They're at the Jack. Anyone you know who's on the JAHC board can sell you some. I can sell you some. But that's one more way to help out our local arts agency.
Right. Okay, because when the party's over and the costumes go where they go, into storage or whatever, all the funds that are generated from wearable art go to what?
To the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council for operations. But as listeners, most people probably know, we are in the middle of a very serious campaign to build a new Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Mm-hmm. And so whatever we can do to support the financial help of the Arts Council is going to make that much likelier to become a reality, which has to happen because we're going to break ground in March of next year.
Yeah, excellent. Great. All right, I'm going to get some raffle tickets, and I'm going to warm up for the big party. It sounds like a fantastic time. Anything else to add? Are we good?
I think we covered it.
Very good. I just want to thank Charlie Harrington and the Hangar Ballroom and
Rachel
Wilson again for being great partners. And just everyone in Juneau, don't delay. Don't be bummed Monday morning on President's Day when you're like, God, I wish I'd gone to that party at the Hangar.
JAHC.org.
That's right.
Right? To get more information.
Or call 586-ARTS.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Julie.
This is Bird Note.
A flash of glittering dark blue cuts through the gray of late February as a male tree swallow glides low over a cattail marsh. The tree swallow's liquid notes hint at spring's approach. Where a broad green pasture meets the forest edge, there is a second, even brighter flash of blue. A male bluebird alights on a fence post. The intense blue of its back glints in the welcome sunlight of late winter. Tree swallows and all three North American bluebird species are among the earliest northbound migrants to arrive, heralding spring a month before the equinox. Both species will nest only in cavities, such as old woodpecker holes or man-made nest boxes. The supply of such specialized nest sites is limited. Competition is intense. By arriving so early, tree swallows and bluebirds improve their chances of finding unoccupied cavities, and they may fiercely guard a nest site until April, before actually nesting. Both species benefit greatly from nest box programs, but it's crucial to put up only nest boxes with very specific hole sizes that encourage these flashy blue migrants, but deter non-native starlings and house sparrows. To learn about how to provide just the right home for tree swallows and bluebirds, come to our website, birdnote.org.
Welcome to the quarterly meeting of the William J. Erickson Individual Native Corporation, or WINC as I like to call it, board meeting inside my head. William's high-pressure job and unusual coping method backfires when his imaginary board of directors hijacks his real life. William Inc., by Inupiaq playwright Lucas Rowley, is a world premiere at Perseverance Theater, January 24th to February 17th. Tickets at Hearthside Books, The Jack, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
We're back with a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copins. It's about 3:17 here in the capital city. Joined in the studio now by a couple of incredible Alaska mountain women. These are not to be confused by the mountain men of Alaska, that bearded beefcake calendar. These are mountain women, and they have something much more important on their minds, ladies. Let's see. So we have Beth Loudon.
Yes.
Right? And Mary, I'm going to get it wrong, say it.
Giannotti.
Mary Giannotti here. So Mary, why don't you start? Tell us who you are and what do you got going on this spring?
Yeah. My name's Mary, and I just, at the end of last year, I've been working, just doing a lot of logistics and had a little bit of a desk job, and before that, I've led a lot of, like, month-long backpacking and mountaineering trips, and spent a lot of time up on the Juneau Ice Field doing research, and done a lot of personal mountaineering or ski mountaineering trips, and I just was really missing that. So I just sent an email or a Facebook message out to a bunch of my friends, and I was like, anyone want to go to the Stikine Ice Field with me? And luckily I had a lot of friends answer back, and I roped Beth in too. So
so what's the plan? When and how many ladies are heading up, and how do you get up there? What's your plan?
Yeah, there's going to be six of us, and we are going to take a ferry to Petersburg, and then there's a helicopter that'll take us up to the ice field after that. And then we'll be up there for about 2 weeks, and we're going to try two first ascents and do a bit of a traverse, so we'll have a lot of different mixed type of terrain that we're going to cross over an ice fall, some flat skiing, and then up a few mountains and... Yeah, Beth, do you want to add anything?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. I think something that's neat about this trip is, you know, it started with Mary sending an email out to her friends, but I think it's really evolved into this vision of sharing this passion of local mountaineering with other women in the community. And so we have started to meet twice a week as the six of us. Well, I should say once is just the six of us, but the other meeting, we do a lot of skills practice. Mm. And we started opening that up to other people in the community, not just the people that are coming on our trip.
Okay, so tell me more about that. When do you meet and where and what happens?
Yeah, we tend to either go on an adventure on a Saturday, whether that's hiking up a mountain. I know last Saturday we just practiced self-arresting, so catching yourself with an ice axe, which is something that I'd never done before and Mary knew how to do, so she was able to share her knowledge. And then sometimes we do it on Monday evening. We have a Facebook group, and we have an email, and if you're interested in joining us.
Okay. Yeah, how would I find your group on Facebook?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just under AK Mountain Women.
Okay.
You look us up. We'll be right there. Great. And we have a Gmail as well. So.
Okay.
And again, that's just AK Mountain Women.
AK Mountain Women at gmail.com.
That's correct.
So if you are a mountain woman wannabe, and
yes.
you know. Okay. Are there any prerequisites or, you know, is it something that anybody can do? Is there sort of, you know, I don't know. I'm curious, like, for you two, when you were girls, like, were you climbing walls and just adventuresome, or is this a new thing?
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I was definitely a tomboy. I was definitely outside a lot of the time. But I know for myself, I don't have a lot of mountaineering experience. And that's been part of what's been great about this group is it's very welcoming. People, you know, who love the outdoors but don't know how to get connected into mountaineering, I think this is the perfect avenue and perfect way to start. So.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So you talked about self-arresting. What are some other skills that you all are going to need to basically survive out there for 2 weeks, carrying everything, rope skills? What are some other things you're going to be working on until then?
Yeah, we'll probably do some anchor building, so practicing making anchors. We've practiced roping up a few times because we'll be all roped up for the majority of the time. And then everyone took or, like, has already been through an avalanche course, and it's a pretty low likelihood that we'll have an avalanche because most of the terrain that we're traveling on is going to be pretty low angle. But you learn a lot in avalanche courses to, like, it makes you think and read mountains differently, I think, and it teaches you a lot of good risk management and, like, especially human factors, I'd say, like how to make sure to get along with a group of people and make sound decisions. What else? And then just skiing.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're all going to have our wilderness first responder certifications as well.
Oh, great.
And that's typically a 10-day course, splinting and everything that we might need out there in an emergency. And fingers crossed we don't.
Right. Well, what kind of elevation will you be at? And what kind of, I guess, weather conditions, hypothermia possibility, other concerns you might have being up there, even in May?
Yeah, I think it's not that high of an elevation. Like, we won't have too many. I think it's around 6,000 or 7,000 feet is the highest that we're going to be. That being said, it's because it's, like, right next to sea level. I think my biggest thing that I'm a little bit stressed about is weather. Even just, like, trying to find satellite images of the area, it's pretty hard because it's usually just clouds. So figuring out how to stay, like, warm and dry and the remoteness of it. We are a helicopter away, but that being said, if there's bad weather, we're kind of just going to need to, like, hunker down and
right.
stay in.
Will you carry a sat phone? How will you stay in touch with emergency responders?
Yeah, I'll have a satellite phone. My friend Becky has a spot, and then my friend Hannah, all women who are also going on the trip, has an inReach. So we'll have several different forms of communication.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So my mom can sleep at night?
Right. That's what I was thinking. My mom would be, like, calling me 8 times a day. Where are you now, Julie? Yeah. Where are you? Yeah, that's just my mom. Okay. But I think she's like a lot of moms. Okay. Well, I have another question for you. So there are a lot of mountain climbing dudes here in Juneau, Alaska. Is there a difference? How are mountain women different from mountain men? Is there a difference in how you approach the trip, how you approach the climb?
Yeah, definitely. I think out of all the courses I've ever taught, my favorite are all women courses, just because there's just a totally different energy. And it's not bad or it's not good, but I do think that the outdoor industry is dominated by more of a, like, bravado type of feeling in the outdoors. And I think there's a lot of different ways to love something, and you can love something softly or intimately or, like, with attention to detail and collaboratively. And what I love about all female trips is I do this too. Like, if I'm going out with dudes, I usually fall into some gender roles, like, not even thinking about it. But
you're the one heating up the water. Or you're
yeah.
Keeping the snowcase clean.
Yeah, but when it's just women, I think I'm completely capable of a lot of that stuff, and so I have to step into those roles, and That's what I love about it, and I love how collaborative it is. And I think, especially for me, like, I feel like my guard's up a little bit with when I'm with a lot of dudes. But if it's women, it's more, like, I feel like I can be more open about my mistakes or when I'm scared.
That's so interesting. Yeah, you can just kind of relax, and nobody's playing a role. Nobody has anything to prove. You're just on the mountain. I wonder if even the language that you use is different. Like, you hear men talk about, I'm going to bag that peak, or I'm going to conquer this, or I'm going to... And I imagine maybe the way you talk about this accomplishment might be different.
I think so. I think it's really interesting because we've done a lot of study on risk management going into the field, and even some of the studies that have been done in the past on decision-making, it looks very different when it's a group of all women versus a group of all men, or... you know, a mixed group as well, and I think some of that has to do with the role of language and the approach.
We die a lot less.
It's true.
Yes, less dying. Go women. Yeah. Very good. That's really, wow. Okay, well, and it's true in our regular life. I mean, statistically, male drivers have more fatalities than female drivers and so on, and that's, you know, I have a 13-year-old who would be beating me right now for playing into gender stereotypes, but statistics don't lie. So, okay, excellent. All right, so let's talk more about sort of baby steps, entry level. I've never climbed a mountain before. So if I come to one of your meetings and maybe learn something, or I guess what are some of the first things that you learned in your journey that kind of got you excited to take it up to the next level?
Yeah, I think, well, being a Juno kid, you just grow up outside and playing outside. I think the big thing that got me into mountaineering was just meeting some really, like, amazing women that, and being, like, first time seeing someone that looks like you and has similar life experiences as you and a similar, like, leadership style or way in the outdoors. I think that's was a big step for me. And then a lot of times we just, like, talk about life or, like, get sidetracked. Yeah. And so it's an easy environment to just, like, talk about gear or, like, talk about different systems. And, yeah, I think maybe Beth could speak more to this because I came in with a little bit more experience. Mm-hmm. But I hope it's, like, part of my goal is, like, that it is in an environment that's approachable. And I have a lot of students from backpacking and mountaineering courses that I send links to my blog and stuff like that because they want to get their foot in the door, and a lot of them are, it's, with those courses, it's all people who have minimal experience.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Would you, what did you want to add, Beth?
So I am actually, I'm not a Juno kid. I grew up on the East Coast in Connecticut, kind of in suburbia of New York. And while I spent a lot of time outside, I hadn't really done many big hikes. And I think it was very incremental for me, just slowly. First, I met people that went on shorter hikes, and then next I met people who wanted to introduce me to bigger mountains. And then from there, I met people that hiked ridges and did multi-day trips. And so it really has been incremental, and those people that welcomed me in and made it approachable made all the difference, and I think that is something that we want this group to be.
Right, because there's room. It's a big mountain out there. It's a big ice field. There's room for everybody. You can find your place out there. Wonderful.
Yes.
That's great. Okay, so it sounds like the trip is full. You say you've got your group to go in May up to the Stikeen ice field. You've got the weekly meetings. People can just join in, give it a try. And then you've got a way that people can support the trip, maybe climb with you vicariously. How can we help you all out? We want to support you on this mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our group members is a talented artist. She draws, and she drew us a nice little logo, and we've turned it into sticker form. And so we're selling those stickers for $3 to $5 just around downtown Juno. So
okay. What do they look like, or how do I describe it so I know what to look for?
Got AK Mountain Women written on the top. They're a 3-inch sticker. You can see a couple peaks and a glacier running through.
I want one.
We will get you one.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're going to have to sell a lot of stickers to make this happen. Right? How much is this thing going to cost? You're going to be taking a helicopter up? Sounds like a big ticket vacation.
Yeah. So we're supporting it by most of us are working through some type of guiding company, so we have a lot of pro deals or already own a lot of the gear because the gear is obviously a big expense. Mm. And then we just got, we're really excited, we got a grant from the American Alpine Club, and that's going to help subsidize it. And then we're applying for a couple other grants. If you're a Knowles instructor, you can apply for, like, instructor development, which, I mean, you are.
Which Mary is. Mary
yeah, I'm developing myself by going on the country. But,
you go. Keep on developing.
Yeah, so it's a combination of grants, and then Beth is doing, like, an awesome job with all the fundraising. Mm-hmm. And we set up a GoFundMe account and the stickers, and we give out, if you donate to the GoFundMe account, we give you a sticker, and we write you a handwritten thank you card.
Oh, that's great. And can I find a link to that through the Facebook thing, or is there another way to search for the GoFundMe?
Yep. If you go right onto our Facebook page, you'll see a link right.
Gotcha.
I think it's the first thing you find. I was on there earlier.
Okay. Well, I'm going to kick in a few bucks. You ladies are inspiring.
Well, thank
Good
you.
Good luck. I would love to talk more. I want to hike with you guys. But maybe the last word would be to any little girls who are listening and look at the mountains and think, I'll never get up there. What do you say to them?
Just go for it.
Yeah. It's. I think the other day we were talking and we're saying we love Alaska because it's just like when you were five, you get to keep on playing. And I think that's when it starts, when you're young. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, ladies. Good luck.
Thanks. Thank you.
On my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. The lark upon my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. Sheds its skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds its skin to find a butterfly within. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain. Oh, one needs. The snow will be a blinding sight to see as it lies on yonder hillside. Lark upon my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. Lark upon my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. Caterpillar sheds its skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds its skin to find a butterfly within.
The station is supported by Breezin, carrying a variety of sandwiches, fresh baked bread, and pastries. Chef Moorhead offers daily changing menu choices for takeout and catering for special events and parties. More information at breezin.com.
Most people stare up into space with wonder. Yet we have this almost alien world on our own planet, just teeming with life. It's a world completely out of sight and out of mind.
I have the utmost respect for corals. They're really sophisticated animals.
Coral is a fundamental part of a huge ecosystem.
they continue living as long as their environment allows them to.
There's this big heat wave that's traveling around all over the world. The coral bleaches, and what you're seeing is its skeleton underneath. It's like your body temperature changing. That's the seriousness of the issue.
And this is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Julie Copens, and what you just heard was a bit of a sneak preview for a film that will be screened next Thursday night out at UAS called Chasing Coral. It's an amazing documentary, and I'm very lucky today to be joined in the studio by Dr. Heidi Pearson. She's an associate professor of marine biology, and she's with the UAS Sustainability Committee, which is sponsoring this screening. Dr. Heidi Pearson, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Julie. It's nice to be here.
So we heard some of the voices of some of the real-life characters in the film. Maybe if you could just kind of summarize the film for us, Chasing Coral. I understand it's the filmmakers did a previous film about ice, right?
That's right. It's the same producers of Chasing Ice.
So if you're familiar with that, so tell us about this story.
Sure. So it follows on that theme that Chasing Ice developed with basically using this incredible time-lapse photography to document these natural events. And so what we're documenting in Chasing Coral is the decline of coral reefs worldwide because of coral bleaching. And coral bleaching, simply put, is when the corals basically die because they're too hot and they can no longer feed themselves and they bleach and then sometimes they are permanently gone.
Wow. I've seen, some of the photography that you're talking about, and it breaks your heart. It's just, you see that, and then you compare it to sometimes as short as a season ago or five years ago or something where these environments were teeming with life. So let's talk just kind of scientifically, and what are some areas that the film goes to and shows us where this is happening, and what do we know about why this is happening and how extensive the damage is?
So the film focuses on a few areas. So, of course, everything is occurring in the tropics because that's where coral reefs live. And they have sites in Australia on the Great Barrier Reef, in the South Pacific, in New Caledonia, and then even in Hawaii. And so what they are showing is sometimes in the period of just a couple of months even, they have these cameras down in the same spot, and they're seeing a healthy coral, and then through time it expels the symbiotic tiny plants, basically, that live inside the coral polyps. These tiny plants leave, and with that, the food source of the corals is gone, and then the whole coral itself dies. So it can happen pretty quickly in some cases.
Right, and it's called bleaching because, sort of, where does that term come from?
Yeah, so it's called bleaching because the coral itself actually becomes white, mm-hmm. like it has been bleached. And so naturally, so corals are animals, and corals are what's called a colonial animal. So we have these tiny little structures called polyps that together you can have thousands of them that form this one coral colony. And these polyps then secrete this calcium carbonate or limestone reef structure, which is what we see. Usually we don't see the tiny animals that live on this reef structure. And so what happens is the main way that these little animal polyps feed is they have these symbiotic plankton called zooxanthellae, and that's what gives the coral their color. Mm. So depending on the type of zooxanthellae, you know, we can have red coral, blue, green, all across the board. But when these zooxanthellae, these tiny plants inside the coral, get too hot, they basically just leave. They leave the reef, and what we're left is just a colorless skeleton.
Right. And you've seen sometimes you can collect bits of that white coral, like if you go beachcombing or whatever. So that's kind of what we're seeing. It's what's the underlying skeleton.
Right.
Is that what you call it? Is it a skeleton?
It is a skeleton.
Okay.
That would be an appropriate way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I guess what happens then? So for those of us who maybe go snorkeling, you know, coral is beautiful to look at. The fish like to swim around. When it is bleached, when it dies, then what? What's the consequence?
Basically, the entire ecosystem shifts. And so corals actually provide habitat for one quarter of all marine life.
Wow.
So it's incredibly important. And so when we lose this basic component of the ecosystem, the fish leave, you know, and then we see the sea turtles leave, and then bigger fish like sharks leave, and then, you know, some marine mammals as well. So it's this cascading effect. When we don't have this fundamental building block of the ecosystem, it all collapses.
Mm. Now, I imagine with this film and with the Chasing Ice film that was done earlier, and probably a lot of the material that you present with the Sustainability Committee and so on campus,
you know, it's easy to feel just disheartened and just feel powerless, and this is happening, and it's happening fast, and we can't do anything. So what do you hope will be kind of the takeaway? Is there a call to action? Is there something that we can do? What's the next step for us here in Juneau, Alaska, when we're concerned with this?
Yeah, that's a great point. And so the last, say, 5 to 7 minutes of the film focuses on these action items, like you say, but for me personally, I was left wanting more.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you come to the screening next Thursday, after the screening, it's about an hour and a half film, I will lead a discussion with the audience. And
right.
I want that discussion to be driven about what can we as individuals do. And I have lots of ideas for people to take away. And, you know, when I teach my classes in marine biology at UAS, we talk about these tough issues all the time. And
mm-hmm.
something that I don't want to do is for my students to feel like they are powerless and hopeless. And so I want to give people that come some tools to take away so they can leave on a positive note.
Right. Well, maybe give me one example. What's something that I can change tomorrow that might make things better than worse? So
the main reason why we're seeing coral bleaching is because the oceans are heating up, and that is ultimately driven by climate change, which is driven by large amounts of CO2 emissions. And so anything that we can do to decrease our carbon footprint
mm-hmm.
will really help not only the coral reefs but our planet as a whole. So, you know, recycling, using reusable grocery bags, carpooling, you know, driving less, using an electric vehicle, being smart about your consumer power, so thinking about how your dollar goes when you're buying things, and then voting as well. So there's a whole slew of simple things each person can do.
Right, right. And it seems like living in Juneau, sometimes I feel a push and pull because I have an electric car, I have a plug-in car, but I can't use it on a day like today. I have
right.
to drive my truck, which is gasoline-powered.
Mm-hmm.
The electric car is powered by rainwater. It's hydropower, which is great. It's clean. It's wonderful. But in order to visit my mom, I have to get on a jet plane and fly to Ohio. So, you know, here in Juneau, there are certain things that make it really hard to minimize our carbon footprint.
Yes, and, you know, no one's going to be perfect at it, but we can just each try our best to do what we can. You know, another thing is thinking about your food choices and perhaps eating less meat, because meat is a big source of carbon dioxide and also methane emissions, which are
mm-hmm.
also part of greenhouse gases.
Right. I know that's something a lot of Juneau people are really trying to eat, you know, more local, more forage things, and that can be hard because sometimes you want an avocado.
I know.
So, okay, good. So the screening, you said it's next Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Is that right? Where will you be presenting the film?
At the UAS Egan Lecture Hall.
In the lecture hall there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what are some other activities? You mentioned a really fascinating field course you have planned. Tell me about that.
I teach a course at UAS called Tropical Marine and Coastal Ecology, and it's an upper division marine biology course I teach, so for juniors and seniors. And so every other year, we go to Puerto Rico in May. So we spend some time in the classroom in April beforehand, prepping and learning mm-hmm. about the environment. And then we spend 8 days in Puerto Rico basically exploring the amazing coastal and marine environment. And the main part of that is that we go snorkeling in different
mm-hmm.
habitats, and the students get to explore the wonderful biodiversity of the island.
Okay. And you were saying before, during the break, the fantastic opportunity this year to see some of the fallout from the hurricanes that we've had down there, and how that maybe has affected some of the underwater landscape and the wildlife.
Right. And so we've had this natural experiment. You know, we've had two major hurricanes hit Puerto Rico. We had Irma and then Maria. And now we're fortunate that we can go back. Our field sites, we'll still be able to visit them. But we have this ability to explore these coral reef ecosystems that we also have been visiting since 2010 and do this before and after comparison. And we really don't know what we're going to find. And so it's going to be exciting for me and my students to see how the ecosystem has changed.
What a great adventure for them and learning experience. Science in action. It's like,
absolutely.
It's not a book, it's not a movie. That sounds fantastic. Great. Anything else that we, you know, those of us who are concerned about issues of sustainability, how can we better engage with the activities you're doing on campus, learn more?
Well, we have a UAS campus calendar, which is available on the website, and so you can keep up to date on that. And occasionally we'll have, you know, announcements in the paper, or, you know, we come on to this show regularly as well. And then, you know, one other thing that with regards to what individuals can do is, you know, share knowledge with others, and particularly youth. The film has a nice piece at the end about going into schools and educating the next generation. And so just sharing knowledge is something everyone can do. It's easy, it's free, and that's a sense of empowerment as well.
Right. Is there an age range you think would this Chasing Coral film would be appropriate for? Would it be over the heads of a 10-year-old? Or?
Oh, no, not at all. I think 10-year-old to 100-year-old. Right. I mean, it's accessible to many different age levels.
Right. Okay. And who doesn't love coral and fish and oceans? And sounds like a really great reminder and inspirational film.
It is, especially on a day like this when we have this wonderful snow and, you know, you can kind of get an escape and watch
this
beautiful imagery.
I like that idea. Okay, well, yeah. I will see you next Thursday night. Thank you so much, Dr. Heidi Pearson.
Okay.
And I hope you have a good turnout.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Will computers become conscious? Can string theory help us travel to the stars? Join us, Seth Shostak and
Molly Bentley and
KTOO News, Friday nights at 8 for Big Picture Science.
Big Picture Science gives you a weekly look into the latest developments in science and technology, straight from the people perched on the precarious cutting edge.
So think big, broaden your horizons, and get the scoop with Big Picture Science.
Friday nights at 8 o'clock on KTOO News, Juno.
Support comes from Hooked Seafood Company, carrying a wide variety of locally caught seafood like salmon, bar prawns, and red king crab. Hooked is hosting a Clean Out the Freezer event on February 24th from 10 to 5, where customers fill mixed bags with seafood of their choosing. Information at 790-4300 or at hookedseafoods.com.
And you're back with a Juno Afternoon. It's about 43 minutes past the hour. I'm here now in the studio with Nancy DeCherney, our fantastic executive director at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, here with the weekly Arts Up, roundup of arts and culture. Welcome, Nancy.
Hey, thank you. A few things going on.
Yeah, always. I know. It's always amazing. So let's just dive in. Tell me what's happening.
Let's see. This evening from 5:30 to 7, there's family night at the Mendenhall Public Library. So it's a special invitation for Head Start families. So the, Lily Hope is going to be there doing storytelling and weaving, and there'll be craft and light dinner provided. So all families should come out.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it does. There is, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Northern Light Church, it is Ethical Invents plus Fossil Divestment. I think maybe the title's incorrect, but it is about the Permanent Fund and fossil fuels. So stop in there. That's a talk with Professor Rick Steiner. A little reception following, 7 to 9 p.m. This is your last weekend, I think, to see William Inc. And if you if you haven't seen it, it's probably better get there. Oh, I just got a little text message that said the library thing is canceled.
Oh.
Probably because of the weather. What do you think?
You know, that actually, I'm glad that came in because it's probably wise. Anyone with evening plans to check sports, things like that, do check because the roads are messy. Yes.
It was shaky coming across the street.
Right. I'm glad you made it.
Yeah, so... let's see, on Friday, when it's going to be sunny, by the way, on Friday, it is Elizabeth Pradovich celebration at the UAS Egan Public Library Gathering from 11 to 1. So that's free and open to the public. Do come out for that. From noon to 1:30, Racial Equity and Liberation Learning Series at the Northern Light Church. And it is Into the Woods this weekend.
Oh,
which
I'm saw that last weekend.
Wonderful.
Wonderful production.
Wonderful production. Great music.
Stephen Sondheim, can't go wrong.
Yeah, so I think this is your only weekend to see that. It is also on Friday night. There's an open mic and poetry slam at the Northern Lights Church, Wushkanadei, local grassroots programs. Stop in there. I think there's a suggested donation, but other than that, come and share the words with people. On Saturday from 9 to 11, Seasons of Collage, the 12x12 art workshop for ages 13 and younger. So stop in at the City Museum. I think it's happening at Sherry's Color Wheel, I think, from gathering what that is.
They've got more cool classes
there. They have a lot of cool classes.
What a great addition to the scene that has been.
There is from 2 to 3:30, the Great American Songbook Series with the cabaret singers. That's at the Alaska State Museum. They're going to be doing Billy Strayhorn songs.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a wonderful concert. And there's a William Inc. has a matinee at 2. There's a barn dance at 7:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall. And we're doing wearable arts.
Oh, wearable art. Yeah, I heard about that. That was
some things going on.
Wow.
And it is sold out for the Saturday show, but we do always put some seats in. We just never know how many. So if you want to, you can come down. We'll start taking a wait list around 6:30, something like that. And there's the live stream, which you were just talking about. Sunday, the wearable art show is at 2:30. I think it's actually at 2. Doors open at 2 and the show's at 3. So I'll have to fix this.
Okay.
And we do have a few seats left for that one. And I'm really looking for help with the takedown on that one. So if anybody wants to just come and see the show and stay afterwards to help us take it down, bring your screw guns and we'll see you there. So anyway, let's see, on Monday, there's a fall prevention class, which would be a good thing to know today.
Yes, I need that class.
That's out at the Pavitt Fitness, Health and Fitness. On Tuesday, there's a UA Board of Regents testimony call-ins thing is happening. So if you want to call in and let people know how important the university system is, talk to the Board of Regents. That's at 4 p.m. on Tuesday. There's a Bitcoin crash course at 5:30 to 6:30 at 60 Degrees North Coffee and Tea. So if you want to learn about what Bitcoin is, for heaven's sakes, you should probably go there. JEDC has its Innovation Summit starting on Wednesday afternoon, and it goes also on Thursday. They've got a great lineup of things going on. So that's about it.
Okay.
Well, are we good?
That sounds great. And a lot of stuff coming up in the weeks to come. So maybe tonight might be a good night to stay in, but get online and check out the calendar. So many fantastic events coming up later this spring. So
get your tickets and
get
your calendars. March gets crazier. So anyway, thank you, and we'll see you at something.
Great, yes. Nancy, good luck this weekend.
I can't wait. All right.
Changes in urination or potentially serious urinary tract infections, as is risk of fracture.
She's just a girl and she's on fire, hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got 4 feet on the ground and she's burning.
And we are on fire with Alicia Keys. That's all for Wearable Art this weekend, Moulton. It's going to be a fantastic event. So this has been a Juneau afternoon on this snowy afternoon in Juneau. That winter storm warning is still in effect until 9 p.m. tonight. Expected lows around 20 degrees, so be looking for snow and ice. And if you have evening plans, you might want to go online or make a call and make sure things are still happening. It is pretty messy out there. Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, host Andy Klein will talk with Kevin White from Fish and Game, this week's Friday fireside speaker at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. He'll talk about a bull moose seen by the glacier this summer. We want to hear more about that. We'll get the details about the Juneau Co-op Preschool's benefit wine tasting, which is next week. Director Michelle Moore will be here to highlight Juneau Lyric Opera's production Into the Woods at JDHS. And we'll talk with Heather Mitchell about this weekend's Juneau Cabaret. That, Bird Note, Music, and More, live at 3 on KTOO tomorrow. This show is repeated at 4 p.m. on KRNN and available on demand online at ktoo.org. With producer Jeff Brown here in the KTOO studios, I'm Julie Copins. Have a wonderful evening. Thanks for listening.